Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga Law School.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that likes nothing better than to settle into a reclining seat, nestle a bag of buttered popcorn in our respective laps, and lose ourselves in the dancing images provided by big-screen movies. Yet no one, not even the three of us, can spend all our free time watching movies. We do have other interests, some of which we're going to share with you during this special edition of our show. And what better time to do this than just before the holiday season, when some of us at least will have a bit of free time to indulge in our favorite habits, say binge-watching that miniseries we've heard so much about, listening to that podcast that has become so popular, or even taking the time to read, yes, I said it, read, the book that's been sitting on our bedside table for the past several months. So let's begin. Hey, I wanted to begin with the closest thing to movies, which are binge-watching television shows. And first of all, Nathan, you brought up an intriguing question when we were talking off the air, and is why we choose the things that we watch. And one of the ones that we are going to talk about, Mary Pat and I, that we've watched, is the three seasons of The Crown. And you know, what is it about us Americans that we love so much British royalty? My brother, to the day of his death, could still recite the entire succession of British kings and queens. So why is that such a...
Well, I don't know. I've never watched the show just because I don't have any interest in any of that stuff.
Although you don't.
I've been told by many confidants that, oh, you don't have to like any of that stuff. You don't have to know anything about it. It's still really good. And I'm dubious of that claim. But for people like me who haven't seen The Crown, it's still sitting in that Netflix home screen and autoplays that trailer every damn time I open it. Can you kind of explain what the show is and maybe why it's worth watching? Maybe try and convince me to watch it?
Okay, I'll give it a go. So it begins in the 1940s. Late 1930s, at least the first season does. And it's going to introduce us to the royal family. And so we have in 1936, the Duke of Windsor becomes the Duke of Windsor rather than the king. And so it starts there. So,
but he loves Wallace Simpson.
He does.
You know.
Okay, so here's the reason why I think that you should watch it. If you look at the people who are playing these different characters, it is a list of absolutely the best British actors who are out there right now.
And this, there are two words that would maybe intrigue me enough to watch at least season three, and that's Olivia Colman.
Oh, she does a fantastic job.
Replaced Claire Foy, if I understand correctly, as the
correct
queen, as Queen Elizabeth. Right. And I mean, that's an actress that we've been following for a long time, and I'd be curious to see what she does with
right.
that role.
And so if you look at the original casting, so Jared Harris, for example.
Yeah. Love him.
Yeah, so he's amazing. If you look at Claire Foy, mm-hmm. if you look at
Matt Smith, the former Doctor
sure,
Who,
sure.
Right. who plays Prince Philip.
Vanessa Kirby, who mm-hmm. plays Princess Margaret. So that's during
She was in Hobbs and Shaw, the last Fast and Furious movie, mm-hmm. so you've got my attention.
Mm-hmm. See, exactly. Okay, so I'm trying to appeal to you. And then you see sort of these characters during the first two seasons, sort of how they grow. And then I think this third season, when the characters are replaced, I mean, that could have gone sideways in so many different ways. But instead, as you pointed out, Olivia Colman, it takes a while to sort of, you know, flip that switch. Mm-hmm. But Prince Philip,
placed by Tobias Menzies. Tobias Menzies is not a name that comes off your tongue easily. And you look at him and you don't even recognize him because he immerses himself so much in this impression of Prince Philip. And then you realize, oh, my God, this guy was in Rome. This guy he's been in virtually everything that's been in Britain, but in small roles. He's a working actor and he captures Prince Philip perfectly.
Of course, the character I had the greatest skepticism about, because I love Vanessa Kirby, was Helena Bonham Carter, plays Princess Margaret. But she pulls it off masterfully. And so I think that is definitely worth
watching.
And then
there's an actor named Josh O'Connor, who plays Prince Charles. And he gets perfectly.
And you'll see him. He's going to be in an upcoming movie that we just saw a trailer for. And so I think that we will – it's one of the – Emma. He's in the Emma movie. So, so for someone such as myself, I mean, she came, Queen Elizabeth came onto the throne the year I was born. So this is my life history. So of course it would be more appealing to me because it does cover a lot of historical events. It also talks about the political relationships between the queen and her different prime ministers.
But look, we go to any supermarket and right there is Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. There's Kate Middleton and, you know, and the future king.
They're still talking about Camilla Parker Bowles, for God's sake.
Exactly. And so
she shows up in this movie,
oh, interesting.
Too.
Yeah,
of course.
Right. And so, you know, there have been three of them now. We've binge-watched all of them. It's amazing. And it's going to be, each one of them is 10 episodes. You can watch them on Netflix. And apparently it's going to be seven seasons in all.
Or so, at least six.
Yeah.
To correspond with the decade she's been on the throne.
And I just have to say that in discussing just television content or streaming content or whatever you want to call it, content that you can watch episodically, I'm so behind on all of this stuff that anytime I'm hanging out with friends or I'm at a bar or something and we start having a conversation about what everyone's watching – now I understand when I bring up some obscure foreign film I just saw and I try and recommend it to someone and their eyes glaze over and I go, come on. Whenever I hear people talking about the Netflix shows they're watching, my eyes glaze over because I cannot keep up with this stuff. And it got to the point.
So what are you binge watching?
Nothing. It got to the point where I just had to kind of give up because I fell so far behind on stuff. I'm also really, really bad about finishing a series that I start. When I pick up a book, for instance, I'm going to finish that thing to the bitter end, even if I don't care for it. But a TV show, I have no problem just dipping out and never coming back again, even if it's a show I enjoy. So there's a bunch of stuff on Netflix right now, like Mindhunter and that new miniseries Unbelievable that I started and really enjoyed and then just kind of left. Stranger Things, I did the same thing with, although that was losing me along the way. So I don't know. It just got to the point where when I get home from work after having to think about all of this stuff, having to consume so much stuff, that I'll just put on the TV and watch something stupid,
mindless,
you know.
Yeah.
So the fact that streaming content, that these TV shows are getting almost better in terms of storytelling, in terms of acting and cinematography than most of the movies we see.
That's irony,
makes me
isn't
think
it?
That I really need to start, you know, shifting my priorities because we probably see 150, 200 movies a year, and the last thing I need is even more stuff to have to think about.
But it's like that,
10 hours at a time. Sometimes
it's like paraphrasing that line out of Raising Arizona, in which John Goodman says to Holly Hunter, "So many social engagements, so little time." I mean,
so many
binge watching shows, so little time.
And honestly, like, I would rather go back and rewatch my DVD copy of Raising Arizona, for instance, than start a new show. It's a big commitment. I realize that. And I've kind of fallen off the wagon. Maybe that's my New Year's resolution for 2020 is to keep more on top of at least the big shows that people are watching. Like Watchmen is really huge right now.
Yeah,
people are raving about Succession. Those are shows that at some point I'll get around to. But then all this other stuff comes out in the interim and they just fall behind. And that's my problem.
Well, and of course, we gravitate toward these crime or police procedurals. So the two crime-related series that we've binge-watched, one, Gomorrah, that I think we've talked about before, which was based on a 2009
movie.
Which
just finished its fourth season.
I've seen the movie.
The movie, the television show, is so much better than the movie. The movie was a good movie for what it was.
Yeah.
But this basically takes that idea and fills it with characters that you follow. This, it's almost Shakespearean
to a certain extent. And so this is about a Naples crime clan and all of the moving
Camorra,
parts.
Which is why the whole play on the name Gomorrah by Roberto Saviano, who wrote the original book and then he wrote the movie.
So then for a similarly themed series, Peaky Blinders, which people were talking about. And I was like, I don't know about that.
Then I got her to watch the first one and we got hooked.
Right, we did.
And that show has been recommended to me so many times. And at one point, I had this one friend that kept saying, you have to watch Peaky Blinders. It just came back. It's so good. And at some point I said, I just got to be honest with you. I'm never going to watch it. Like, let's be honest. It's kind of like when you lend somebody a book and they want, and you keep checking in. Did you read that book that I lent you?
Right.
And at some point, you just have to come to terms with the fact that they own that book now. And you're never
going
to get it back.
Exactly.
It's kind of like that.
Exactly.
Well, the only thing I think that might intrigue you is that in season two, Tom Hardy comes on the scene.
That does
playing
intrigue
this
me.
Jewish crime boss, Alfie Simmons, and he I'm sorry, the camera loves this guy.
And I would tune in just to hear what kind of weird mush mouth
accent
he employs.
And he does do that.
Yeah. I mean, that is his trademark, and he has stuck to that. Yeah.
But Cillian Murphy,
at least
is
you have captions you can turn on.
Right, so this is about, you know, so this is a British crime drama, but it's actually focused in Northern Ireland. And I think that
Birmingham, it's in Northern England.
Yeah, sorry.
In Birmingham. But Northern Ireland comes into play with it because Sam Neill is a detective who comes and is trying to trap these guys.
Like Sam Neill.
And Cillian Murphy is great.
He's good, too.
So I don't know. We might make you watch one.
Okay, maybe I'll get hooked.
And it's set.
Watch the Tom Hardy.
And it's set just after World War I.
Sequence.
And it's based upon a real crime family that operated in Birmingham in the late 1880s through after World War I. But it's
so we have
Peaky Blinders,
Crown, Gamora, Peaky Blinders.
All of which you can see basically through Netflix or some other streaming service.
And I'm not watching anything at all.
Okay.
And with that, I need to say that this is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies One by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our special edition about favorite binge watches, podcasts, and books. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
On the alert!
Hello, it's me.
A message to you.
Wait, what? Are you talking to me?
And I can do you.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey.
Oh, it's Spokane Public Radio.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
Please call me.
That's right. I need to call them.
Tell me something good.
I'm going to call Spokane Public Radio and give them some money.
I want to thank you.
You are the best thing ever happened.
Yeah, cool.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss some of the miniseries we've enjoyed binge-watching. Now we're going to continue by mentioning some podcasts we've liked listening to, and even maybe some of our favorite books we've most recently read.
I'll start because I sort of revealed in the first half of the show that I'm basically a Cro-Magnon man when it comes to keeping up with TV. But what I am up on are music and podcasts, and I found one that kind of combines both of those things, and I think it's a pretty popular show right now that a lot of people are listening to, and I'll recommend it anyway. It's called Dolly Parton's America. Are either of you listening to this at all?
No, uh-uh.
So basically what it is it's a show that's sort of about – well, Dolly Parton, I mean, she kind of seems to be everywhere right now. Speaking of miniseries.
Right, 50th anniversary at the Grand Ole Opry.
Yes, yeah. And speaking of miniseries, she has her own Netflix show now called Heartstrings, which is basically an anthology series where each episode is inspired by one of her songs. But what this show does is it mostly talks about her sort of as a cultural equalizer. This idea that not only is she one of the most beloved celebrities in the world, but she's also one of the least disliked, which I think is an important distinction.
Right, I agree.
And so,
she's the Tom Hanks of country music.
Yes, or the Mr. Rogers of country music. But she's much more complex than that. And so this is hosted by a guy named Jad Abumrad, whose father is actually a Lebanese immigrant. And he became friends with Dolly Parton either in the 80s or 90s, I believe, and they talk about that friendship. And so this guy has firsthand access to Dolly Parton. He interviews her. He follows her around. What he's basically doing is he's focusing on her career. He's focusing on sort of her place in the 21st century canon, this idea that she's something of a feminist icon that doesn't identify as a feminist herself. It also talks about how she struggled to make it at first and her weird relationship with Porter Wagoner. All that stuff is in there. And they also talk about her childhood in Appalachia and how that kind of shaped her music. And they do deep dives on individual songs. So there's an entire episode that's just about her song Jolene. And it's just kind of talking about the backstory of it. And then they analyze the song both in terms of its sound, its lyrical content, the music theory behind it, essentially. So this might be kind of a niche show, but it kind of ticks all of my boxes because I'm a huge Dolly Parton fan. And the just the idea of hearing a 30-minute episode that's just about Jolene is enough to get me excited. But I think it's worth listening to because I think she is an important figure in a lot of ways.
What's it
and
called
is
again?
Obviously still resonating. It's called Dolly Parton's America. Hmm. And I think there are about 7 or 8 episodes in. There's still a couple left, but I would check it out. You can probably binge listen to it while you cook Christmas dinner or something like that.
Well, we usually binge listen to these things when we're driving to Seattle.
This would be a perfect
it's
one.
Perfect time. Yep. So, Mary Pat?
So, two of my favorite things, crime and cults, are combined in the podcast Bundyville.
Bundyville. Two seasons, seven episodes.
I hope they put that on the poster if podcasts have posters.
Right. And some of you may recognize the person behind Bundyville because we talked about this briefly before. And it's Leah Sotile, who used to write for The Inlander.
And friend of the show. She's been on Movies
right?
101.
Gonzaga University graduate. Mm-hmm. Yes.
One of your former students.
Well, no, yeah, she
and
took a class I taught once.
Yeah, that counts.
But it is co-produced with Oregon Public Radio. And
Long reads.
Yeah. It is an amazing sort of history of the standoff at the Wildlife Refuge and the Bundy
Malheur
family.
National Wildlife Refuge in 2016. Right.
So the first season starts out focusing on that and all of the different sort of characters who are involved. Season 2 focuses at least in part on Eastern Washington and North Idaho, and it is just an amazing series because it talks about the politics, the religion, the libertarian sensibilities of people, and it's just really well done. So she is interviewing people. She gets really great access. Mm-hmm. And so we find out more about, you know, sort of the history, the politics, as I was saying, and so forth. I highly recommend this. I mean, it's not necessarily sounds like it would be everyone's, preferred genre, but this works so well.
The thing I like about it is that it not only gives a historical and cultural backdrop to this whole thing, but Leah is such an amazing narrator. She's got a great voice, and at the same time, you feel her character coming across, just this woman who went to school here in Spokane, started her journalism career here, moved to Portland, and moved the step up. It's truly entertaining.
And that was called
Bundyville.
And it's
two
it's,
seasons of it. You can get it through the Oregon Public Broadcasting. Google Bundyville, and
put
you'll be able to find it easily.
Podcast app.
Well, and I would also give a shout out to the Serial podcast. Because that
we just listened to season 3.
Yeah, and so that has 3 seasons. They're crime oriented, very different. They've had some impact on what happens in the legal system as well.
That's right. So we're in the limited time we have left, did you guys want to mention any books that you might want to recommend?
Yeah, I'll stay in the lane of true crime here because Mary Pat and
that's
I are kind of true crime buddies. We're always kind of sharing recommendations. But I'm going to recommend one to you, MP, and to the audience, and it's called Savage Appetites by Rachel Monroe. And we've talked on the show about the true crime industry because it has become an industry at this point and sort of the phenomenon of women being drawn to true crime podcasts and books and even true crime cons where people show up. And that's kind of a running thing throughout this book, Savage Appetites. But what it's really about is 4 different women throughout history that have been involved in crime in some way. So, for instance, this woman named Frances Glessner Lee, who created these kind of detailed dioramas that were very important in the birth of forensic science.
I love her.
It's amazing stuff. I had no idea who she was. There's a story about a woman who became weirdly obsessed with the Manson murders and actually moved into the guest house of Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski's place.
Oh, don't
place.
Tempt me.
And it gets weirder from there. She also talks about the West Memphis Three and how this landscape architect became romantically involved with one of the incarcerated killers and became involved in the eventual, release of those 3 men. And then the final chapter is probably, weirdly enough, the darkest one, and it's about this 20-something Canadian woman who met a guy online and started plotting a mass shooting with him. And so what this book gets into is sort of the pathology of all of this and the reasons that that people, but women in particular, are drawn to this stuff. And it's reminiscent of that Michelle McNamara book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark,
right.
Because there are some memoir elements sneaking in. But this is a quick read. It's only about 250 – it's less than 300 pages. But I found it really interesting because it's something that has always fascinated me about the true crime phenomenon is this idea that women – are usually the victims in the stories that are
right,
focused
rather than
on,
the but alleged perpetrators.
Yes,
yeah.
But they're also the people that consume it. So this is kind of a good barometer of why that is.
So it's interesting because I did not pick the typical true crime books, but I picked two, although they do involve crimes. One is Catch and Kill, Ronan Farrow's book, and everybody's been saying to me, oh, I already know that story. Well, I think this is – it gets a little repetitious in the last third, but I think it's worth reading. And the other one I would highly recommend is Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland. And that is about the Troubles in Northern Ireland
and
some of the
high-profile
people who we associate with the movement, political, revolutionary, and so forth. And that probably could have done with a little bit of an edit, but having been to Northern Ireland last summer, I think it's well-written. I think it will add something to stories that people know something about, but not a lot.
Well, you know, I'd like to add something too, but after the two of you talked about true crime, talking about a science fiction trilogy written by a woman, Becky Chambers, seems way off beat. But I am going to mention it. The three books are The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, which came out in 2014, and that is the book that pulled me into this trilogy. A Close in Common Orbit came out in 2016, and Record of a Spaceborne Few, 2018. If you want science fiction written by a woman that talks about compassion, empathy, and racial acceptance of different genders, this is her Wayfarer, Becky Chambers, her Wayfarer trilogy. That is for you.
And so if you're going to be on airplanes a lot this holiday season, we've got some good airplane reads for you.
Right,
I think.
Or podcast listens.
There you go.
That's right. And with that, it's time to close. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I took a break from movie watching to run down some of our favorite binge watches. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarbrook for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again return to our favorite pastime, exploring the world of contemporary cinema. Until then, remember this quote, supposedly attributed to none other than the artist Vincent van Gogh. It's good to love many things, for therein lies the true strength. And whosoever loves much performs much and can accomplish much. And what is done in love is well done. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.